then I ended up dropping it. You know what I mean? Because I felt like once it was time to apply for jobs, I felt like because I didn't go to a portfolio school, I like didn't, you know what I mean? I wasn't qualified to compete beyond the intern level.
Quote unquote qualified.
Yeah, quote unquote qualified. You know what I mean? Because I was like, there was no guidance. You know, I went to the best journalism school, you know, in the country, like Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern, but there was really no addressing, you know, there was no addressal of After Effects as like a program.
Right.
I'm Aria Collins, and you're listening to Colored Lens, a podcast, a show, a space created to share successful yet colorful stories that don't allow us to be colorblind. So let's get it started. So I have Lo here today with me, and she's actually going to talk about her experience from working a 9-to-5 to freelancing. Lo is a digital artist who specializes in illustration and motion design. As you're listening to our episode, feel free to go on Instagram, but don't leave us. You can double task and take a look at her Instagram. It is LoHarris_art, and you can see her work as we're having this conversation. So I'm going to have Lo introduce herself before I say too much. Hey, Lo.
Hey, how's it going?
It is going well. We are recording on a Sunday and we're chilling. We're relaxing. How are you?
I'm doing really good. Today is wash day. Gonna wash that scalp. Gonna clean some house. Gonna get prepared for the week ahead. Because, you know, one thing I noticed when the house is in disarray, you know, before I start this freelance week, it gets to me. Mm-hmm. So I try to like clean on the weekend.
No, I love that you said that, because even before we started hitting the record button, I was wondering, like, as a freelancer, do you take your weekends as your weekends, or like, are your days all just kind of jumbled up together?
Yeah, it depends.
Like, I love that you brought that up.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it depends. It's like, you know, obviously, if a large client, like, you know, on Friday, a large client approached me about a project. And I was looking at them rates and I was looking at that opportunity and they were like, we need 6 sketches by Monday. And I was like, okay. so I did it. You know, so if it's a thing like that where they're like, hey, it's a Friday night and we want to do something really wild and I'm down for it, I'll make it happen and I'll just take my quote unquote weekend on a Tuesday. But as a freelancer, you really don't have a weekend per se, but you have to really take agency in carving out days for yourself. With Black History Month, I'm doing a lot of work, so I've been a bit busier than I probably would be in like an April or something like that. But I'm holding out strong, and you know, today was a very good day for me in terms of just like rest and relaxation.
Yes, I love that. I think no matter if you're doing like freelancing or working, I think just making sure you have at least a day to yourself is regardless like so important. So like, okay, you just mentioned that you're more busy in Black History Month. So that's a perfect like opportunity for me to tell our audience about like your style. Like, I know that you're an artist, but like tell us about your personal style and like your signature elements in your work.
Absolutely. So again, as we said in the intro, I'm an illustrator and an animator. And what I really like to focus on with my work is themes of confidence, of vibrance, of joy, of visions of a more just and kind world. I use lots of bold, confident shapes and bold colors. And I have these very, very specific characters who people ask me all the time, are these based on people you know? And it's like, yes and no, because I try to create characters that have a sense of cultural specificity through like hairstyles that I see on a person, or like just like little details. Like, you know, like one of my favorite characters I've ever drawn was like, he was like a big boy, you know what I mean? And he was like this man and he had chocolate skin and he had his beard and a bald head and he had just like a little neck roll at the back of his neck. I was like, that's like a real person. Like, I feel like that's a person I would see at church or like at a gathering or at like a rooftop bar. You know, so I really like to, you know, kind of create these characters that feel specific yet universal and who all kind of come together to create these relational compositions that, you know, where the characters are not only relating to each other, but they're also kind of relating to the viewer in a way.
Yeah, no, for real. I can tell just by like looking at your work that I can, when I see, yeah, they do look like real people. And I love that you brought up the point that like it's through little observations of just watching your surroundings around you. I think that's amazing. I remember when you first started, or like, I mean, obviously you're going to tell us like how you got into like, you know, illustration and animation, but from as someone who was watching you, your friend as a page, like going back, I remember when you first made the Instagram page and you had started off, like you could probably tell the story better than me, but I think I remember you doing like a project where you were consistently posting different queens every single day. And I want to hear about that project. And like, was that, yeah, like how, like what made you decide to do that?
Yeah, so I guess this all starts on why I made the Instagram in the first place. I have always loved to draw. I've always loved to draw. And it's weird because I actually kind of was more I was more of a digital native. Like as a kid, like I would draw in Microsoft Paint. I would use like cracked versions of Photoshop. I would be drawn on the mouse pad with the mouse. Like I would print out like anatomy tutorials when I was in middle school. And I went to like an arts high school, but I studied creative writing. So because of that, I didn't necessarily take what I was doing that seriously. It was just something I liked to do after school, and that I was an internet child. Wow. I did not go outside. So I would just spend all of my time doing that and learning that stuff. You know, because I was surrounded by like peers who were trained fine artists and who were taking classes and stuff. So I was like, this isn't art. This is just me having fun. And then fast forward, right. You know, I stopped drawing when I went to college. And then, you know, I was at work at NBC News, and one of my colleagues, Heather, she's great, was drawing on her iPad, and she was using this app called Procreate, which honestly, I don't know why Apple needs to come get me to make a commercial about like how the iPad changed my life. But I saw this iPad and I saw this app and I looked at it. I said, man, if I had access to that kind of technology when I was in middle school and high school, I wonder where my art could have gone. And so I was like, you know what? Wow. I'm just going to buy it. So I bought this iPad with the intention of reacquainting myself with my inner child, reacquainting myself with the side of me that drew, because I had not drawn by that point in 5 years almost. Like I had stopped drawing. Wow. And so I was like, okay, like I made Pinterest boards. I like, you know, found different artists and just like looked at art and just like observed, like, what do I like about this? Like, what do I like about that? Like, what do I, like, yeah. I tried different things. I like, you know, pieced different things together. And I created this art Instagram page as a way to sort of find a way to explore my style in a safe space. And I use the name Low Harris. Low is my nickname, you know, because I didn't necessarily want my peers to like look up Lauren Harris and then the first thing they see is my art. Like we know now that completely backfired. But like at the same time, it was cool because like I had this little page and it was kind of on my terms, whether people kind of knew about it or not. So slowly different friends started finding out about the page and they would like it and stuff. And during the month of February, I launched this project called 29 Queens, where it was like pretty much like an experience for me to force myself to draw every single day and to force myself to like try to like challenge my style, you know what I mean, in a different way that also was just like a fun Black History Month project. So I chose like a list of different Black women, you know, across industries who I felt like were powerful, you know, from Grace Jones to Nina Simone to Marsha P. Johnson. Like I like got all of these figures together and I like used like popular images of them to try to like recreate them in a more simplistic way. Since then, my style has definitely developed, you know what I mean? But it was like a really fun, like first project to kind of let myself know that I'm committed to this. Like I am committing myself to trying to do this. Like, and the best way to do that is through like a project like that.
How did you manage even having this? It was like your passion project at the time. How, and I love that you had that discipline and like motivation to really push yourself to do it. But like, how did you manage that while working? Cause you were working at NBC News.
Yeah, I was, I would just do it in my off time, you know, when I went home, you know, maybe at the end of the day, right before I left, like, you know, usually, you know, with NBC News, like there are lots of moments where we'd be crashing we say, we call it crashing, mm-hmm. where basically a bunch of mm-hmm. requests are coming in and we're all dying pretty much. So when we're crashing, of course, on days where we're literally just all dying, you know, of course, like there would not be any room for that. You know what I mean? But in the downtime, like all of my colleagues kind of, you know, in order to kind of brush up as designers and to kind of engage themselves creatively and keep the work somewhat interesting, you know what I mean? And to keep seeing new things, they would have Pinterest boards and they would just be looking at Pinterest and like collecting pins. And they're the ones who kind of introduced me to like the value of Pinterest and trying to like stimulate your creative brain to kind of imagine like the kinds of things that you could do.
Yeah. And like, what was your role at NBC News? Because it sounds like it kind of interplayed with what you were doing on your free time as well.
Yeah, I was an associate animator, and they created that role for me after I finished as an NBC page.
Perfect. Oh my, and what made them decide to create that role for you? That, I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah, the page, you know how the page program is all like, you know, like going around, like, you know, try to like make, you know, projects for yourself as well. Like, there's a lot of great guidance, but I think like the most successful pages were ones who were able to make connections mm-hmm. even beyond mm-hmm. their assigned mm-hmm. rotation. It was funny because before, you know, I had already done motion design internships at the New York Times and at Bustle and at the Chicago Reporter. And it was funny because when I did the New York Times and, you know, motion graphics animation sort of internship, I was applying originally to be like just like a video intern in general. Like I wanted to go out and shoot mm-hmm. and edit and stuff. And, you know, the summer before I had made just like on an off chance, just like a random motion graphics project for the Chicago Tribune. I mean, no, not the Chicago Tribune, sorry, for the Chicago Reporter. And mm-hmm. when I made that, I didn't think anything of it. I was like, okay, whatever, that was cool. And it was the only kind of motion graphic, like infographic sort of video they ever had by that point. And then I happened to throw that clip into my New York Times application. And then they were like, hey, can you do like, you know, we know you applied to this thing, but actually you might be a better fit for this other thing. And I'd never heard of motion graphics like that. And I was like, and they're like, do you have more stuff? And I was like, and I didn't. So I was like, ooh, I'm gonna make some stuff. And, you know, so I like went right home. And I like called my uncle. I was like, hey, like, do you have like some kind of like data from like a plan and report? You know what I mean? From an old plan and report, uh-huh. something that I can use as inspiration for like a story to tell with motion graphics. Right, so he's like, yeah, use these stats. And I like sat there and I like pretty much like taught myself After Effects more purposefully within the span of like 24 to 48 hours, you know, because I'd done it before, but I wasn't thinking about it like that. And so I made this like clip or whatever and put it all together, submitted it to the New York Times. And then they responded back. They're like, oh, next time try this effect instead. And I was like, okay. And then I got the internship. And so that was like my first time ever meeting motion designers. And then like, of course, I also did some motion design at Bustle. I have a mentor and friend, Stephanie. We still talk like every other day. And Stephanie helped me a lot, you know, with motion design, and like Leisha and Carrie and like Katie and the other motion designers, like who were on Bustle's team at that time. And then I ended up dropping it. You know what I mean? Because I felt like once it was time to apply for jobs, I felt like because I didn't go to a portfolio school, I like didn't, you know what I mean? I wasn't qualified to compete beyond the intern level.
Quote unquote qualified.
Yeah, quote unquote qualified. You know what I mean? Because I was like, there was no guidance. You know, I went to the best journalism school, you know, in the country, like Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern, but there was really no addressing, you know, there was no addressal of After Effects as like a program within the mainstream curriculum. And, you know, even though it's so important that we know how to tell stories, I think it's equally as important to know how we can present those stories in a meaningful way. You know, with all of that in mind, you know, I ended up, you know, joining the page program, and I was kind of joining it because I was like, you know what? Maybe I don't have what it takes to be a motion designer, but I think I could be a producer and I can work in entertainment and I can do all this stuff. So like I applied for the Instagram, I got in and I did these rotations, and I was actually very open to the kinds of work that I could do. I was open to whether it was late night or whatever. Like I was pretty open. And what I found you know, to happen was that I kept, like, you know, in order to, like, kind of stand out in a rotation, you know, each page is bringing something a little bit different. And I found that my superpower in every single one of my rotations was the fact that I knew how to work graphics and After Effects. And I was able to use that skill in all three of my rotations, yeah, even though they were not production-based rotations. Like, one of them was, like, mm-hmm. business-based. One of them was marketing-based. And I was just, After Effects kept mm-hmm. popping up. So then I was like, you know what? Like, you know, in my last rotation, it was with NBC News Now, which is like the streaming platform version of NBC. And it was a very tough rotation. And it was even tougher because I decided, you know, I wanted to make a connection with the small NBC digital animation team that was there. And they were doing really cool work that I wanted to be doing. And in order to make that relationship, I actually, you know, my hours were 1 p.m. to 9 p.m. Normally, I ended up coming in at like wow. 9 or 10 a.m. and staying, you know what I mean, to do extra hours with that team. And then staying, you know, right. until 9 p.m. when the NBC News Now show wrapped. And that was a very mm-hmm. chaotic. I don't think people realize like how hard I was really working. Like, I was working so hard.
Yeah, that's a lot of hours.
And finally, in the middle of like some deposition or something, you know, they were reporting on it. You know, the guy who would then become my boss as an associate animator was like, hey, I want to make a role for you. You know, I want to add you to the team when your page stuff ends. So that's how that role was literally created for me, you know. And it's funny because I had met that guy, you know, in earlier rotations. And I just happened to just like keep up with mm-hmm. him just because I was just asking him questions like, yep. what is being a motion designer all about? You know what I mean? Like, I didn't have any intention of choosing my way into that, or like it just kind of mm-hmm. happened naturally where I genuinely was just confused and asking him questions, you know? And then it kind of came together where the opportunity met.
I think you dropped so much like good. I think even though you felt as though it was coming naturally to you, you were still so conscious of every single move that you were making. Like when you said like every single page assignment that I had, I knew that I had my superpower and I used it to my advantage. Like that is so amazing. Like that. Okay, now we just gave out like a freebie for anybody who's like entering the page program. Like that is how you should enter with the mindset, right? Future pages. Now you know. Like honestly, no. But I love that. I love that a lot. Like I'm sitting here like, oh, wow, I should have showed them some of my superpowers a little bit more. But even like I love how you talked about like them creating a role for you, because I'm noticing in a lot of different spaces and like from a conversation with peers, like I've had a lot of conversations with peers who like they've been in positions where they've stood out so much in their role that there's people who are willing to create these roles and create these spaces for mm-hmm. you. So that is amazing. And how would you say, and I mean, we know 2020 was, I feel like 2021 still feels like 2020. So everybody knows that 2020 was a wild year for everyone. Yeah. There were so many things happening from COVID to BLM to all the chaotic things that I feel like is still happening in 2021. Yeah. But I want to ask, like, how did 2020 really impact your career? Like, how did your work, which was like you talked about, it was like a little Instagram that you had low Harris because you didn't really want people to find you. But like, how did people find you?
Yeah.
What was your moment?
So I, you know, had this little account and I was still showing up to work. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I think like I was it's only been a year. I'm young and hungry and like I'm ready to go. And like, I think that a lot of times like we enter into corporate spaces and we're like, all right, like I made my entrance. Now I'm going to try to plan my next move to figure out how I can grow into this mm-hmm. role or like get more responsibility or like whatever. And, you know, what I was finding, you know, kind of unfortunately was that, you know, our team was getting so much more responsibilities that, you know, I didn't really get, like, I like kind of expected to be able to like do a little bit more professional development that was more guided or more organized. And mm-hmm. what I found was that, I mean, I was doing pretty much the same. I got to be doing the same amount of work and like a similar quality of work to like my direct peers. But I was still like, you know, like the lowest paid member of the team. I was still like the lower member of the mm-hmm. team. And then every time I try to initiate a conversation about what it would look like to grow, there really weren't mm-hmm. any answers. And so I mm-hmm. kind of, you know, by that point I was like, all right, you know, I'm losing hope here, you know? And right. I think that I started to get a little, like, you know, a little bit more stress as well, you know, after COVID. Well, actually, no, when COVID started and we went home, you know, I did actually get a little bit of relief because I felt like I felt like I could like move a little bit different while I was at home. And I got really into this idea of like occupying my space and like working within my space instead of like showing up to an office where there are like cliques and like office cultures that kind of can stress you out. And so I got really comfortable just being in my space and doing work. And then, you know, all the stuff with George Floyd started to happen in the summer. And I remember a very distinct moment where I was doing some graphic, picking up some graphic to cover like his killing. And it was the video of his killing, like the famous, you know, knee on the neck situation. And if you've ever seen, you know, like, you know, some NBC digital shows, like, you know, they'll have like a quote graphic or something, you know, like to kind of like that animates the words on as people are saying them. And I happened to very unluckily be doing, I didn't know what I was getting because I was just trying to, you know, like when we're crashing, we're just going through stuff. So I happened to pick up that particular one. And it was literally me animating George Floyd's words as he was dying. And I had to listen to it over and over because if you've ever used After Effects, it has to buffer. And I had to listen to this man dying in my ear over and over and over. And then that combined with like being one of the only Black designers at NBC at that time, combined with just like being, you know what I mean? Like the youngest member, the lowest paid member, the lowest ranked member. And I have to deal with that. I was like, whoa, I took two days off. I took 2 days off because, you know, it was so stressful. And so in those 2 days that I took off, like I was just drawing, you know, and I drew this piece called Justice, just to, like process my own emotions. Like me and my roommates were bummed out. We were in the middle of a curfew in New York City. I remember we were all just sitting on the couch sad. And I was like drawing this piece. And then I posted it. And I actually turned off the comments too, because I didn't even want people to engage with it. I didn't care what people thought. I was like, I don't care. I don't need any hate comments. I don't even need any love comments. This is just how I feel. Exactly. And I posted it. And it was that piece and then some other pieces of mine that somehow got picked up on the stream of support Black artists on social media. And like my account got swept up into these sort of like conversations about Black artists, like Black. And they were calling me an activist too, which I never, you know what I mean? I never marketed myself way or like expressed myself to be that way. And also I was stressed because in news, you know what I mean? They have this thing where it's like, oh, you can't like show how you feel about a certain thing. And I was feeling like some resentment about that, specifically about Black Lives Matter, because it's unfair to kind of ask like a Black person working within that space. To like kind of be quote unquote objective about something that questions their very humanity. Like what?
Exactly.
You know, I could be killed on the street.
No sense.
Exactly. So I was like, that's not fair.
I think that's crazy. Not at all. Because I'm not with the digital news group. I'm on the ad sales side, but I was within a digital news group at the time. And I know that I have so many people, like I have friends and peers once again. And even for me, where they say like, you're not allowed to show your opinion or your feelings, but it's like, why do BLM is not a political movement?
It's not a bipartisan issue. Thing about aisles. It's not like a choice on whether you're fiscally conservative or not. It's about humanity and it's a human rights issue. And the way that people talk about it, you know, within the media, it's like, no, guys, no, we're going in the wrong direction. How this conversation is supposed to go.
Exactly. So it was that's okay. And then you said that you didn't really define yourself as an activist until people started putting you in that category. So like what happened after that? Like now I kind of want to hear the full story. So after you posted the picture and like what happened?
I posted the picture and I never, and again, I'm not out here, I'm not claiming to be nobody but me, you know what I mean? So people are just like all of these like narratives onto my work. And I'm like, you know, I understand like a part of me working like within a corporate space where I'm designing creative work, I kind of like take that a little bit better than some other artists would, because I think that artists, you know, are predisposed, like we're predisposed to really being protective over our babies, like over our creations and the way that people talk about it and the way that people interpret it. I'm very much like, look, like I've been working, you know what I mean? Like within like a client interfacing space for the most part. And I'm kind of like, people are going to interpret this how they're going to interpret this. You know, I can tell them what I think about it and I can put that out into the world, but people are free to interpret however they want to interpret. So I wasn't as stressed about that part of things, but I did kind of have to, I started to, as I kept working in news and as I kept creating stuff, and as I kept kind of like defining, you know what I mean, my own narrative, like I felt this dissonance between the strength that my voice had and the capacity at which it was being used at that company. Like my voice was not being utilized in the way that it could have been. And I kind of have this theory that like the opportunities that each individual person has, I think of it as like a garden, right? And in that garden, you know, like everyone has their own garden, everyone has their own soil where certain plants grow better. And so I may look at like a white man and I see that his NBC tree or his like corporate media tree is so big and so nourished and so beautiful because of like who he is and the soil that he has. And then I look at my tree and it's all wilted and it's not doing good, but I'm spending like 80% of my energy on that tree. And then out of the corner of my eye, I see this bush and it's this beautiful rose bush and it's my freelance career. And she's like, hey, maybe I water me, and then I start watering her, and then she becomes as big as that other guy's tree. You know what I mean?
That's
like,
that's
where I had to put my energy. That's where my voice really shined through. It wasn't shining through the bureaucratic system where like Black voices are lost in management. It was being used properly when I was representing myself. And so that's when I kind of think more about what would it look like for me to just be my own artist. Yeah.
I freaking love that.
And sometimes you wake up. Sorry. No, I was just going to say.
No, like, go ahead.
Sometimes you wake up. It's like, it's a beautiful thing when you wake up in the morning and suddenly you're like, I'm tired of making other people's dreams come true. Today, I want to make my dreams come true.
Yeah.
Because I think about like the skills that I have and the effort I put into these things, into like products and into videos and into graphics that like are not never going to be associated with me anyway. And then I think about how much more validating it is when a brand comes to me and says, we want to work with you. And then I put that same energy that I was putting into that corporate project into this freelance project. And I actually see the benefits of that in real time.
Exactly.
It's wild.
Exactly. That, and another thing I was going to think, even the pay, like you said, you were one of the lowest paid members, putting in your energy, putting in your time. And it's like, why not get recognized for your own work and get your own paycheck and maybe have your own pay rate depending on the project, like that. And like, how, okay, it makes me want to ask, how did you manage your, what at the time? So at the time it was a side hustle, because you didn't just fully just get up and say, all right, I'm going to quit because this is already booming. This is booming for me. I know it's going to work. I'm going to quit. For a time you were maintaining your job and working on these projects. How did you do that? Like, even like literally how did you manage your day to day? Was it okay with your job? Like, how was that?
For me, I don't need any complications. I don't need anybody coming to me saying you slacked off because you were not doing your job. I did my job. Okay. I did my job.
Right.
And I did it well. And I did not sleep because from 9 to 5, I was working, you know, for them. And then from 5 on out, I was working for me. And I would sit there and like, I would have clients like Amazon, like all these different clients like come to me and they'll be like, can you make this thing in 2 days? And I'll be like, all right, you know what I mean? I'll do it tonight and tomorrow night and then I'll get done. You know what I mean? Because I was like, I understand that there has to be a level. Like that was, for me, I was in investment mode. And I was just like, I understand that I'm not going to be able to have a balanced schedule if I'm going to like make this leap. And like, there's certain clients and certain projects and certain opportunities where if Rihanna came to me tonight and was like, I need you to like draw me like some stuff to launch on Friday of next week.
Like Fenty.
I was like, if Fenty came to me and they were like, I need you to do this tomorrow, I'd be like, you know what? Yeah. Like, like, here's my money. Of course you're going to pay me for the time, you know, for the rush and all that. But I'm like, look, like I did for this, this is an investment. Because this would launch me into a completely different thing. I'm not going to regret that. I'm going to take that. You know what I mean? Right. If it's somebody like Suzy Q, you know what I mean? It's like, I need you to like design a logo for my podcast. And it's like a random person and they don't really work with illustrators that much. I'm like, oh, you know, girl, I'm kind of tired. You know, I can't do that for you right now. But there are certain opportunities. You kind of have to weigh it out. And so for me, like the opportunities that I was getting, because at first my biggest concern was that, oh, you know, I think they're just like hiring me because I'm a Black artist and they're not actually interested in my skills. And they're probably just like, you know, it's just going to wear down and the brands are going to dry up and they're not going to want to do anything. And then I started getting like requests that were just like had nothing to do with identity politics at all. And it was like all these various requests that were just like all over the place and like very versatile. And then I started to get in my head like, oh wow, like I think my work can live in a lot of different places actually. And I could kind of see the potential. And like, you know, I was having like a chat with some girlfriends the other day, and one of them was talking about how, you know, like when she was, you know, working her 9 to 5 and all that, and she would close her eyes and she couldn't see the future. It was all black. And then when she got her business and things started to line up, when she closes her eyes, she can see the future. She can see what's there. It's not bleak anymore. And I was seeing that when she told me that, I was like, that is, yes, like it's not bleak anymore. Like I see where Lo Harris can go actually. And I'm willing to invest in that.
No, I freaking love that. I literally wrote it down. Like, I love how you said investment mode. Like, even though, like, you know, like, all right, I mightn't have much time for myself right now. I mean, it was COVID, so I was going to say you don't have much time, like, to hang with family, hang with friends, have a social life. Like, sometimes that is an investment. Investing is not only, like, you know, finances. Like, oh, yeah, I'm going to put down a $200 investment on this project. Mm-hmm. Like, but you have to invest. You have to invest in yourself at certain times. Like, okay, I'm going to sacrifice XYZ amount of time because I know where I want to go.
I freaking love that.
And it makes me want to ask, were you, you have to balance it. Of course, you're not going to go to the point where like you're running on empty, because like, how would you get, like, I want to ask, like, how do you do the quick turnarounds? How do you get that creative inspiration? Do you ever feel like you have that like creative block and you have a deadline for a project?
For me, like, I think that the practice that I put in to just like try to like learn and discover my style, it was a combination of things. Like my time, like at NBC trained me to be efficient and fast and to kind of have an eye that's like, how do I solve this? Yeah. Like, how do I solve this design problem? But then also like my exploration of my style, like once I understood, like I think that like there's like this like quote from Ira Glass about how like, a lot of people in their creative process like hit this cycle where they have taste and like their taste is very specific and they know what looks good and they know what doesn't look good, but for some reason their skills aren't quite caught up to like execute on their tastes in the way that they imagined it to be. And so I think like after a while, like at first it was kind of frustrating, you know what I mean? But then after a while, now I'm like, I feel like my skills and my tastes are pretty aligned in terms of like illustration. And I'm like, okay, you know what I mean? Like I can just kind of like look at something and I'm like, all right. Like I kind of have this idea, I have that idea, like understand that this dimension might look good right there. And now I can kind of see something in my head and just like tackle it. And it does take, you know what I mean? It is exhausting because like the industry standard for illustrators is a brand comes to you, you give them like 3 sketches or 3 variations of something, and then they choose or elaborate on one of those variations. But that first, like honestly, the hardest thing for me is like that first stage of just coming up with 3 variations of something. And sometimes I may like, you know, draw inspiration from rejected sketches from the past, or I may just like come up with something entirely new, but like it depends on what they're looking for. But it's, I mean, like that is like a very difficult part of the process. Like, and sometimes like, I mean, even on this big project that I'm crashing on right now, I would literally like, I sat up in the middle of the night last night and I was like, I see a vision. Like I see the vision, like this is an option. And then I'll quickly like jot down the sketch while it's in my head before it goes away. And then I that's like a new idea. It's right there.
That and I feel like what it sounds like it makes your I want to say your life a little bit easier is the fact that you really know your style and you know your art and you know what you're bringing in before. I think like when I like, okay, I did, you know, when I was looking at your Instagram and I looked at your website, I looked at your merch, like you have a style, you have a, it's like you have your own brand, you have your tone. So when clients come to you, I feel like they also know what they're coming for.
Yes, I'm definitely, it's like, it's cool because I think like sometimes I do occasionally get like approached by someone who doesn't know anything about my style at all and just heard of me word of mouth.
Oh, wow.
But the thing is like, that's tricky because I prefer someone who actually knows what I do and what my stuff looks like and like what they can expect from me before they talk to me. Because the worst thing ever is like, you know, and this is early on, like I would take like commissions for like just like random people. They weren't brands. Brands will do their research, but like for random people. They don't really know exactly. Like they give me references to what they want. They give me references from other artists' work. And they're like, can you do this? And I'm like, that's not like, what about this? Because did you see my work? Could you choose something also from my work just so I can make sure that you know, because I don't do hyper-realism. You know what I mean? Like my characters are their own thing and it's its own universe. Which is why I'm trying to employ this idea of low Harris universe. But like, you know, it's like important, you know what I mean? Like, I prefer, like, I don't think of myself as like a graphic designer or an anonymous graphic designer or an anonymous artist. Like, I think that what I love about the work that I'm doing, especially right now, is that there's this trend of collaboration. It's not like I'm like a random, you know, person that they're saying like, just get, I need this done. I think that these brands are consciously like, we see your personality, like we see the whole package and we want to collaborate, you know what I mean? Within that. And like, that's something that's very important to me. And it makes me feel valued as a partner, you know, when I work with these different brands, when they're kind of like, okay, like, you know, we know the low Harris style and we want to have a piece of that. Not just like, hey, can you just like do some text on the screen for me? You know what I mean? Because I heard you animate. Right. You know what I mean? Like, then when people come to me like
exactly.
that, and they didn't really care to do any research. You know what I mean? On what they're at, like, who they're talking to, and what I can actually give them. It's harder for me to kind of feel passionate about taking that project.
Exactly. No, and I get that. And for someone who isn't, you know, really in the art industry, someone who's listening, they're like, wait, but what's the difference? What really is the difference between like someone who has a graphic design career and freelancing compared to what you're doing with like illustration, animation, and motion design? Like, what are those differences?
They're all married together and there's lots of interdisciplinary overlap within those things. But the way that I would personally define it, and another person may define this differently, is like, when I think of graphic design, I think that there's a brandlessness about it where you like create something that is like specifically within, like there's no like flair of characters, like it's very text based or color based or shape based, or like, you know what I mean, like there is character in it, but it's not something where it's like I can look at, like if it's graphic design for a big brand, like it's not that often that you can kind of look at it and say, I know which graphic designer did this, unless you're like a famous graphic designer who kind of gets to break a lot of rules. Like I think of this guy, ZZ Designs or something like that. Like he does, like he's a graphic designer, but like he's known for just like a very specific aesthetic that like, if a brand comes to them, like they're not, if Sephora came to him, like, it's not going to look like your typical Sephora graphic design. It's going to look like his stuff. So, like, he's in the intersection of, like, he's more of a personality, or they're more of a personality. I don't know how they identify. But they're also a graphic designer versus, like, I think, like, there's, like, another league of graphic designers where it's just like, hey, like, I'm just, you know, I'm here. I'm going to seamlessly blend into the design. I'm not necessarily going to be credited by name. It's very under the radar. It very much blends in with all the other things you might already have. And it's like low key like that. And then when you have illustrators, of course, there's personality that comes with that. I think her name is Agatha Sorette, Agatha Sorette. I don't know what, like her last name, I probably am pronouncing wrong, but like she's known for doing, like she has these very distinct little characters with round faces and beady eyes. And usually they're kind of like like sexy time characters. Like it's like lots of intimacy in her work, but she's like a French designer. And I think she did like a collaboration with Oui Yogurt, Oui by Yoplait. And she has her little characters.
Yes. Oh my gosh,
there.
My favorite yogurt.
Yeah.
Oh, I know them.
That commercial. Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And there are illustrators who like, I see them and it's like, they don't explicitly say like, this is Agatha and like, you know, all this, but it's like as an illustrator who like knows of other illustrators, like I can look at that and I'm like, is that her? Or like, I'll see something, you know, like, you know, that other illustrators might've contributed to. And I'm thinking, ooh, I bet that so-and-so who did that. You know what I mean? And, you know, sometimes brands want to bring in the illustrators more as a personality too, but it's like there's something, you know, there's something else to like, you know what I mean? There's a personality, and like that can happen with graphic designers too. So I guess like there is like a difference in terms of like the content of the kinds of things you're making. But I think on either side of the aisle, on either side of those sort of like subgenres of digital art, there is like a personality tier where it's like there are like graphic designers and illustrators who are like personalities, and their stuff isn't necessarily like, hey, this is generic, quick, we just like need a visual representation. It's more like, ooh, like this is a thing and this is a collaboration. And so yeah, I guess that's how I would describe those things. But
no, but that's perfect. And like for someone who's listening right now, and they're considering a career or considering creating an opportunity, like they're an artist right now, they're good at graphic design, or they're working towards being an illustrator, or like they just kind of want to consider freelancing, maybe not even within the art field at all. What are some pros and cons? Like, I want to talk maybe if there are any cons. What would you say are the pros and cons to like freelancing in the work that you do?
Yeah, I think that a pro, you know what I mean, is definitely like, especially if they're the kind of client who's approaching you for you, you know, I think that the pro is there is like a certain deference to expertise that the client is ideally giving you, you know, where they're like, we have these stipulations, but we really want you to just make this thing. And you know what I mean? How you would make it, but we might have little tweaks, right, like make it this color blue or something like that. So that's kind of a pro, like being approached for you, like that deference to expertise that comes with that if a brand is working with you. And that's usually, you know, before there's work that goes into being able to do work like that, where it's like you have to undergo some style development and really work on yourself that way. It's like working out, you know. Another pro? I mean, again, like working for yourself can, like the timing, like managing your own time can be a pro or a con, depending on how you're doing mentally and like how you set things up for yourself. I'm personally still trying to figure that out for myself.
I was actually going to ask, like, what does even your day-to-day looks like? So
yeah. No,
I love that you said, you're still trying to figure it out.
I'm still trying to figure that out. Like, yeah, it's
you just started. It's not that long ago.
Yeah, yeah. I have time, but I'm trying to think, what is another pro? I mean, I love what I do in general. So if I think of more pros, I might say them.
I know you do.
But like in terms of cons, I think the cons are, I think that, and this is like more of like a if then sort of statement. But if you're an artist who maybe, like, you have to be kind of honest with yourself. Like, are you willing to like take critique, or are you willing to deal with people's feedback? And to what extent, and like if someone is over asking of you, like knowing how to manage that professionally and respectfully to your client, like that can be a challenge for some people. And that can be a challenge in general, because it's about dealing with people. But, you know, for me, like I'm attached to my work, but I'm also detached from it. So I'm willing to do whatever it takes for like the thing that I'm making to be the most as successful as it can be. Like, even if it's something where it's like, I did it one way and I liked it that way, and they're like, actually, we think, you know, this might work better given the thing, I will seriously consider what they're saying and be like, you know what I mean? If this is what's going to get it to the finish line and make it as polished as it can be, then I'm willing to look at that versus, and I think, you know, this might apply more to like fine artists, but I think like sometimes people can be uncompromising, and like, you know, a part of client work is like a sense of compromise and like also a sense of guidance. So if I have like, you know, I had like one client who, you know, later in the production process wanted to change a bunch of things about the work, even though we had agreed that, hey, if you want to do major changes, that happens earlier in the process. And so I said, you know, sure, but I want you to know, you know, it'll be this extra fee. And then they had like a question about colors. And I was like, I can change this color, but I would also like to let you know that I suspect this is what's going to happen to the balance of this composition if we do this color. If like, I can still do it for you and mock it up. Would you like to proceed? You know what I mean? Like, there are ways that you can kind of like, because sometimes there are things like, you know, if they had changed that color, the composition kind of would have been a little bit too, you know, it wouldn't have looked as good as it did at that point. But you still offer that to the client. You just let them know your professional opinion. And if they want to move forward with that, then so be it. You know, you don't have to use the final version in your portfolio. You know what I mean? Like, but
exactly. You know, it's, well, that it's is good. So true.
You got to work with them.
Yeah. So, yeah, I love that you say that, because I'm sure there could be some people that is like, but this is my work and I know what's best for me and I know what's going to be best for you. So that's that. I love that. Just given your professional opinion. And as we're getting ready to wrap up, what advice would you give to any early creatives who are just starting off their career, or maybe even not even that early, but they know that they have this talent, this art, and they want to make that switch? What advice would you give to them?
Yeah, I would say to just like revisit the thing about, you know, setting your schedule. Like, it's going to take some time, but like really have, mm-hmm. You know, have in the back of your head that at some point you're going to need to take the reins on like and carve out time for yourself. I have not perfected this yet, but I know this is something that I'm going to have to do, and I'm still working through that. Uh-huh. Carve out time for yourself, because it can be very easy to like kind of get swept up in, especially if you're getting a lot of marvelous opportunities. You don't want to turn those down. You get swept up in it. You're taking this, you're taking that, you're taking that. You're riding the wave. And then sometimes you may have a warped perspective of like, oh, I need to make this much by this time and I'm scared. What if in April no one talks to me? It's like, girl, you have like 8 more months in the year. You already like make, like I would say, even just like set a goal for yourself for the month. You know what I mean? And let that be your standard for like, you know what I mean? Just like how much work you should or should not be taking, you know, and make it a realistic standard for the month. You know what I mean? Instead of thinking about, but what happens 8 months from now? You can't control that. So that's like one way that you can start to carve out your schedule. I would say, especially for early creatives, the second thing I would say is this development. Developing your personal style is so important, because I think that a lot of people, you know, want to like jump in and they want to like start getting paid too. And like you can, but it's important, you know, I mean, if you want to take it to the next level, really investigate your market. Like there are different kinds of artists who like make money in different ways. There are some artists who make money doing commissions for individual people who like have patrons on Patreon, who like, you know what I mean? Are like more like, hey, I sell prints and I ship them from my house. I'm not that kind of artist. You know what I mean? I don't have the capacity to be shipping prints from my house. I do sell prints, but like it's through like another service. So, you know, for me, I live within this market of like, hey, I'm this artist who like works on projects with like clients, and I have like some passive income, you know what I mean? Through like prints and stuff like that, but like kind of like figuring out how you want to make money and how involved in your artistic process, like what are your strengths and weaknesses in like that business, and then B, developing your personal style, understanding. And this is a thing, because you can't compare yourself to other artists. You cannot compare yourself to other artists, but you know, just sitting down and kind of understanding where your art lives in like the grand scheme of things. Like if you think about a marketing positioning grid, because I studied marketing at Northwestern as well. I think about like the marketing positioning grid. It's not about like, how do I be better, quote unquote, better than these other people? It's about like, who do I have a lot in common with? Okay, in this quadrant of the grid, where is my unique position in all of that? That's the most productive way to think about that, because you can't take the place of another artist. You're not going to take the place of another artist. They're not going to take the place of you, but you can live in the same quadrant and potentially attract the same clients. And, you know, you can have your own unique niche. You can have your own unique sort of offering to clients, because like, you know, opportunity is like a carousel. Don't get discouraged when you see other people getting all these jobs or doing all this stuff. Opportunity is a carousel. Sometimes people are like, sometimes you miss the big horse or the high horse, but there are all these other horses on the carousel and they all come back around again. And it's also okay to sit on the carousel bench too. You're still on the ride. You know what I mean? But everyone's not going to be on the same horse all the time. There's not one artist who can take every single opportunity ever. And if anything, it's more beneficial for artists to sort of like build community with each other. And when they can't take jobs, they like suggest some people in their quadrant.
Someone else
could also take that job. Yeah. And then the same offer would be passed across you all. You all share. Because opportunity, it's a mindset of abundance. It's not about scarcity.
Yes, I love that. I think there's millions, billions of people in this world. And I love that you said like the niche community and really knowing your market. But what about a young artist that might be feeling as though they're a little bit scared to put their work out there? What advice would you give to them?
I'd say just do it.
Like just do it.
Like, and maybe that's just, not like just the most like comforting, but it's like, hey, like do it like on your own terms. Is the better answer. Yes. Do it on your own terms. Yes. So that might mean you make this account and you name it, have a completely different name for it. You don't post your face on it. It might not be a
Lil Harris.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I could have done better. I could have done better. I should have been like,
we still like, found you. No, I love Mandy it. Or something. I love it so much.
But like, you know, you make yourself, if you want to be a little Batman, you make yourself a little Batman identity. You know what I mean?
That's
you
right.
Make
yourself
a little Batman identity. And you know what I mean? If that's what you feel more comfortable with, because, you know, you do want to, like, I think the most important thing is like to build a community with other artists and to share your work, and like you guys comment on each other's works and you encourage each other and you make group chat.
And how do you find the community? How do you find these communities?
I'm putting your work out
someone
there.
Who's like, I don't know. That's right. That's
you
right.
Put it out there and then exactly. Someone may comment like, I love how you use this color. And then you look at their page and it's like, and I it's like how you use colors. Like, you know what I mean? And
right.
Then a bigger exactly. Artist may see your work and be like, I really think this artist is underrated and they deserve their flowers, and then they might share their work, and then there's a whole mm-hmm. New group of people who like want to see your work mm-hmm. Like it's funny mm-hmm. Like that.
I love that. I freaking love that. And let everybody know where they can find you. Speaking of like showcasing that work, where can we find you?
Absolutely. So you can get all the most up-to-date Lil Harris stuff at @LilHarris_art on Instagram. That is also my Twitter handle as well. I also post on LinkedIn. In terms of upcoming projects, like I do have a YouTube channel that is Lil Harris as well. Where I share more like sort of information and more advice about how to, you know, how to find your artistic mm-hmm. style, how not mm-hmm. to compare yourself to other artists, like how to take yes. your artistic vision seriously, like how to like find your path as a multidisciplinary artist. Like these are things that I'm very mm-hmm. passionate about talking about. And I want to share this with like other early career creatives as I'm dealing with them in live time. I'm also working on some children's books, but that's not until
oh my gosh, that's
2022
so fun.
Or 2023.
Okay.
That's still in early development, you know what I mean? But it's with uh-huh. Penguin Random House and with Cordo Books. And
oh, I'm trying to think,
what else do I have? Yeah, I mean, honestly, I'm just trying to build the Lil Harris universe. Like I want to create yes. for my art a universe of a visual universe of understanding, because I do see the versatility in what I do, and I do see the potential in what I do. When I think about famous art styles like The Simpsons or Dr. Seuss or mm-hmm. you know, whoever, and I think mm-hmm. about the ways in which those visual universes have expanded into amusement parks, into yes. movies, into video games, yes. into like all these different things and all these different merchandise. Like I aspire to that because I feel like, you know, I want people to look at my stuff and be like, I know what I would look like as a Lil Harris character. I know what yes, a donut would look it. Like. You know what I mean? Like, I know,
yes.
like I can insert myself yes. into that universe and it feels familiar to me. That's what I want. Like, I want to make art for the people
yes.
and I want people to see themselves. It's all power. It's people power. So that's what
yes,
I've got.
The power to the people. I literally just imagined myself like walking through an amusement park that was the Lil Harris.
I would love that.
I freaking love it. I love it. Okay. I highly recommend her YouTube, even if you're not considering being an early creative artist, I feel like you still give good advice for anyone who's considering going a freelancing path. I was watching some of your videos, so I highly recommend that. If you want to hear more about Lil Harris, yes. that you go check it out. Okay, this was such a good conversation. I'm so glad we did this.
Yes, this was amazing.
Okay, all right. So thank you so much, and we will chat soon.
All right. Take care, y'all.
Thanks for listening to Colored Lens, a space where being colorblind is simply not an option. Please subscribe so you never miss the show. And while you're at it, leave a good old 5-star review. Don't forget to share this episode with a friend so they can hear this story too. You can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter @ColoredLensPod, where we always keep the conversation going. You can also check out more at www.colored-lens.com. Don't forget that dash. Until next time, y'all. Bye.